We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
What is the most shocking thing someone confessed while on their deathbed? Story one. My mom was from China, though we are now happily residing in a European country. We went back to China for my grandmother's final weeks as she was dying from terminal cancer. During my grandma's last days, she requested that my mom stay with her alone. It was only then that she revealed my mom wasn't her biological child. My grandma confessed that she had bought my mom from a child trafficking ring, which was, unfortunately, common in China, because she had tried for many years and still couldn't get pregnant. My mother cried a lot, not only for the unimaginable pain that her biological parents likely went through in losing a child, but also for the fact that my grandparents had gone above and beyond to treat my mom as their little princess. They truly did treat her as their own. They were never abusive and only gave her the very best in life. They even willingly sent my mom to the U.S. for a university education, even though they weren't wealthy by any means. Story 2. My mom told me about the death of her father, my grandfather, and his last words to her. She said he was on his deathbed, and it was clear he was nearing the end. He motioned for her to come closer so he could tell her something. She leaned in, expecting some declaration of love or something deeply insightful. Instead, he said, "The good family silverware is hidden in the ventilation system about 15 feet out from the furnace." She looked at him like he was crazy. He added, "What? We travel a lot, and that's where I hid it. That stuff's expensive." He passed away the next morning. Story 3. My grandfather was in the hospital in a pretty bad state. He could barely speak, but he made it clear to us that he had something to say. He asked my mother for a piece of paper and a pen. Thinking he had something important to leave behind, in case he didn't get another chance, my mom brought them to him. There was silence in the room as he scribbled something onto the paper, with my mother and her two siblings waiting in anticipation. My grandfather finished writing, and with a big smile, he turned the paper for us to see. "I've got a girlfriend," it read, as he pointed to Anna, a neighbor and friend of his. The goofball ended up pulling through and lived for several more years. Story 4. I have both a good and a bad story to share. I'll start with the good. It's not exactly a deathbed moment, but as close as it could be. My aunt had cancer. She knew she was going to die, likely within a week. She couldn't eat, and even drinking was difficult. She asked to be heavily sedated, essentially kept asleep for the last few days, saying, "This whole dying thing sucks, and I've had more than enough." So, a doctor was called, a plan was made, and it was carried out. The last thing my aunt said before going under for the rest of her life was, "Ah, I see the stars. They're sweet and run carefree. Gather them up." And that's when she went under. She passed away 3 days later. Nobody knows what she meant, but somehow those final words suited her, and my uncle, her husband, got them tattooed on his chest, over his heart. The bad. My other uncle was in a serious car accident. It was severe. In the ambulance on the way to the hospital, he said, "Tell my wife that Wendy is my daughter and I love her." Name change for privacy. He died a few minutes later from internal bleeding. Wendy was the neighbor's 5-year-old daughter at the time. That caused a huge uproar, to say the least. Story 5. I'm a medical student, and I had a female patient who was new to our practice and was HIV positive. I needed to ask her how she contracted the virus, whether through stool contact or intravenous drug use. She told me it was sexually transmitted, and the only reason she got tested was because her partner of 3 years, in his final moments in hospice care, told her, I'm sorry, I wanted to tell you. Forgive me. Heavy stuff. Edit. To be clear, he died of cancer, not AIDS. Some people assumed it was AIDS and that my patient should have already known by then, but that was not the case. Another edit. She has been HIV positive for 20 years, has no symptoms, and is undetectable. All her numbers are great. Medicine has come a long way, and HIV is no longer a death sentence for most patients. Story 6. Well, it was meant to be a deathbed confession, but she pulled through. My girlfriend's mom told her the name of her birth father after saying for years that she didn't know. She had previously claimed she had been with too many people at the time and couldn't remember. It was Orange County in the 80s, and apparently my future mother-in-law partied with most of the wrong crowd in Southern California. But she did, in fact, know who my girlfriend's dad was and finally told her after more than 30 years. It turns out he now lived less than 3 blocks away in our small town in the Mojave Desert. His kids look exactly like my girlfriend did at their age. We never made contact, as his criminal record is extensive, and by all accounts, he's not a good person. Story 7. My dad had an impacted bowel and was heavily medicated. Before he went in for exploratory surgery, he tried to write me a letter expressing his feelings. He could barely talk before the surgery. He kissed me with tears in his eyes, knowing this might be the end. The paper was folded and labeled on the front. Only open if I die. While he was in surgery, I opened it, even though I knew I probably shouldn't. It was a few paragraphs of unreadable scribbles. I couldn't make out any of it. He made it through the surgery, but unfortunately developed C. diff, likely due to poor hygiene standards at the hospital, and was transferred to hospice care. I know it might not sound that bad, but if he had died, I would have never known what the note said, and it would have haunted me forever. Later he told me, it probably said how much I loved you and wish I did more for you or something like that. You know, dad stuff. He's the best. Story 8. I'm using a throwaway for this one. My grandpa's whole career was in the military. He joined just after World War II, as he had just turned 18 when World War II ended. He and his 6 brothers all enlisted at the same time. Their first experience in combat was in Korea. My grandpa was a paratrooper, and one of his brothers was a field medic. For some reason, the 6 of them weren't placed in the same squads. He said that during a really intense firefight, his squad crossed paths with his brother's squad. His brother was trying to help an injured squad member when he was shot 3 times, twice in the back and once in the chest. My grandpa ran to drag him out of harm's way and pulled him behind cover. He held his brother in his arms and comforted him as he died. They both knew he wouldn't survive. His brother passed a few minutes later, and something in my grandpa's mind just snapped. He said for the rest of the war, he used the enemy as an outlet for the rage over his brother's death. He went from being a terrified, inexperienced soldier to a relentless fighter. He said he felt no fear after that, only hatred. He fought with incredible intensity and aggression. He didn't specify how many people he killed. All he said was, "The day my brother died was the day I became a killer." He never gave a number because, as he put it, "If I told you, you'd see me differently. I wasn't a man anymore. I was a cold-hearted force that wanted them to suffer." He admitted that when the opportunity came and no fellow soldiers were around, he would try to inflict as much pain as possible on injured enemies. He described beating them, kicking them, injuring their limbs, and even more disturbing acts. He didn't want anyone to witness it. He knew it was wrong and dishonorable, but the rage overpowered everything. My grandpa received a Purple Heart and multiple military honors after the war. He said if anyone had known what he truly did, those awards would have been taken back. He said Korea was the only time in his life he didn't feel human. He felt like something evil, and he admitted he liked it. This shocked us because he had always been the kindest, most gentle man I'd ever known. He never swore, never got angry, and was incredibly loving. His marriage was strong, and he gave my dad and aunt a very loving childhood. You would never guess he once took joy in combat. He died with many secrets. He only revealed the truth about his actions because he wanted to die with a clearer conscience. He had never even told my grandma what really happened during the war. I believe he struggled with serious trauma. He called it a bloodlust he had never felt before. Watching enemies in pain made him feel euphoric. I don't think he was a bad man. I think war and loss pushed him beyond his limits. He entered the war to serve his country, but ended up fighting for revenge. He's long gone now, so I can't ask for more details. But I believe he did worse than what he admitted. Story 9. From the super religious, Bible-thumping side of my family, my great-grandmother, on her deathbed, admitted that her mother was one of them native women. Her mother had apparently been light-skinned enough to mostly pass as a white person in their small North Carolina town. When she passed away, the truth somehow came out, and the town refused to allow her to be buried in the white cemetery. Instead, they let her headstone remain, but buried her body in a nearby cornfield. Then the entire town simply pretended it never happened. After I heard that story, a relative found a photo of my great-great-grandmother, and I couldn't believe anyone ever thought she passed as a Southern white woman. She looked like a young Jeff Goldblum in a dress. Story 10. Shortly after he was diagnosed with the final stages of heart failure, just a few weeks before he passed away, my grandfather told me several stories about World War II that completely changed my view of him and of war in general. Now, before I begin, I should tell you that my grandfather was one of the kindest men you'd ever meet. Always friendly, never drank, the kind of man who'd give the shirt off his back to someone in need and handed out the biggest candy bars in town on Halloween. Everyone loved him. Shortly after D-Day, my grandfather was part of a 12-man rifle squad fighting in northern France. As his unit entered what seemed to be an abandoned village, they were ambushed by a German squad and torn apart. They won, but by the end of the fight, only three of the Americans were still alive, and one of them was badly wounded. The squad leader and his assistant were dead. The two unwounded soldiers swept the scene and hauled three badly injured German Wehrmacht soldiers into the middle of the street. My grandfather looked at the other American soldiers, said, "No prisoners," and cut the throat of one of the Germans right there. He said he almost vomited because there was way more blood than he had expected. His partner lifted his rifle to shoot the other two, but my grandfather stopped him. He said there might be other German troops nearby and didn't want to attract them with gunfire. So they dragged the other two into a shallow roadside ditch with about 6 inches of water and stood on their heads until they drowned. After that, he said he hated Germans. He confessed to a number of disturbing acts during the war, including shooting civilians and killing German soldiers who were trying to surrender. Apparently not an uncommon occurrence. But the worst? He said he only felt guilty about one thing he'd done. In early 1945, his new squad was going through a small German village when he and a couple of other soldiers kicked in the door to a house. Inside was a small elderly German woman in a wheelchair who immediately started yelling at them in perfect English. My grandfather kicked her wheelchair over, rolled it out the door, and then knocked over an oil lamp as he left the house with his partners. She burned to death. He looked at me with cold eyes and said, "That was too cruel. She was an old woman. I should have just shot her." That moment stayed with me. Story 11. My grandfather and I were never close, even though we all lived in the same house. We were both stubborn know-it-alls, so our personalities clashed. We loved each other, just rarely had anything to say. Anyway, most of the family was away on a trip, and it was just me and my siblings looking after him and Grandma when his heart condition worsened. We took him to the hospital, and I was told, "This is it." I told him the same. He just nodded silently and said, "Yeah, I figured." I spent every day by his side while studying for my exams. We still didn't talk much. The rest of the family booked the fastest flight back and arrived just a few days before he passed away. I found out a week after his death that when I had stepped out to write an exam, he told my mom he was incredibly proud of me for holding everything together and that I wasn't as lazy or self-absorbed as he once thought. I never got that final hug or moment of understanding with him, but I'll always love and remember him fondly. I'm glad we did understand each other, even if it wasn't face-to-face. Story 12. My grandpa, when he was dying, awoke after being asleep for most of the day. It was around 2 a.m., and my cousin and I were on watch to wake up my mother, who's a nurse, if anything went wrong. He sat straight up and looked right through me as if I wasn't even there. And he started talking to his sister, who had passed decades earlier. He loved her deeply and always spoke about how much he missed her. He was having a full conversation. "Hey, Lena, I've missed you. It hurts," followed by unintelligible mumbling and groaning. It wasn't just what he said, it was how he said it, like she was standing right in my place or directly behind me. He never even acknowledged my presence, and it honestly freaked me out. The next memory, which I actually cherish, was when my grandmother from the other side of the family was in hospice. She was on her way out. She and I always used to joke about death and how it was shocking she was the last of my grandparents, considering she smoked, drank, and stayed up all night watching TV. She was my best friend for my entire life, and I really wish I had known it would be the last time we talked. She was in her hospital bed and looked at me as I held her hand. She said, "I'm ready now." "You want the Jell-O now, Grandma?" I asked. She genuinely laughed and said, "No, I'm ready. I'm ready to go chase rainbows." Then she relaxed and said she was tired and wanted a nap. My son, who was 2 at the time, said, "I love you," as we left, and she was only the second person he had ever said that to. I'm crying just thinking about it. She was such an amazing woman. Miss you, Grandma. Story 13. Thankfully, this didn't end up being his final words, but man, it made me appreciate him even more. A best friend of mine has this grandpa, a real sweet old grump who's been slowly declining with age. Last year, he got very sick and was hospitalized. He was even a bit delusional. My friend called and asked if I could come visit him, since he basically saw me as another grandkid. So I made the trip and told my friend to keep me updated on his condition. We genuinely thought this was the end, so we all wanted to say our goodbyes. Then my phone went off. I answered, worried, only to hear my best friend laughing hysterically. "Papa wants to know if you're okay." Yeah? "He keeps freaking out and saying we need to find you because you shot yourself in the foot." At that point, I was laughing hard, too. I'm in the Army Reserves, and even in his confused state, this sweet old grump was worried about the silly adopted grandkid. Even when we thought he was on death's door, he was still thinking about me. He's doing okay now. Story 14. This isn't exactly a deathbed moment, but it happened after a terminal diagnosis. A woman started messaging me on Facebook. I responded lightheartedly, thinking she had the wrong person. She seemed kind and well-intentioned. Until she started talking about how beautiful I was as a baby and how she knew my parents. I questioned this, as it felt suspicious. I was sure she wanted something. Even the details she knew about my family felt off. Turned out she was the mother of my long-lost half-brother, the one my family had been searching for over 35 years. Why we were never able to find him, all we had was a baby picture she had sent before disappearing. We only knew his nickname, which was a shortened version of his middle name. His last name was that of a man she married when my brother was still a baby. And nobody knew anything about any of this because she just dis-a-freaking-paired. You know, back in the 80s. When you could easily do that. She had told him her ex-husband was his biological father. His stepfather and supposed real dad never knew the truth either. My dad, his actual biological father, has since been able to meet him. They did a paternity test, and it confirmed it. He's my brother. This woman, may she rest in torment, caused her own son a lifetime of psychological trauma. For what? To unburden herself? Story 15. I'm a bit late for this. Better now than never. My grandfather died a few years before I was born, on my mother's side. He did a lot in life, had starter stock in Coleman, and invested in the original plastic milk cartons. He was wild and adventurous, but also a heavy alcoholic and smoker. Every Saturday morning, he would go to a small donut shop in Massachusetts. I can't remember where exactly. I'll have to ask later. Smoke an entire pack of cigarettes and eat a dozen donuts. The man weighed 180 pounds. I still don't know how he managed that. On this particular morning, he wasn't feeling like himself and even told my grandmother that this might be his last day alive. After taking a sip of coffee at the shop, he looked at the clerk and said, "Well, this really sucks," and his head went straight into the cup of coffee. He died of a pulmonary embolism on the spot. Story 16. I found out I had an uncle I never knew about. His mother confessed on her deathbed that he was actually the result of a relationship between her and my grandfather, who were first cousins. The man he believed to be his father his entire life never knew. His parents had gotten married before she started showing. This new uncle later called my grandma, but unfortunately, he missed meeting his biological father, my grandpa, by about 3 months. He had recently passed away. My grandpa was a drifter during the Great Depression and had stayed with his cousins for a few weeks while hopping trains. That's apparently when it happened. This was all before he married my grandma. Anyway, my mom and her siblings were excited to meet him, but he said he wanted to tell his own family first. Then he stopped returning calls. We've left him alone since. We're not sure if he ever told his family. Story 17. When my grandma, on my mom's side, passed away, she had spent at least 3 weeks in a semi-conscious state, or more like a dreamlike state, before finally dying. During those weeks, she would constantly tell my mother that a boat was waiting for her. Her house was on a lake, and her deathbed was in a room that overlooked it. She kept asking if it was all right for her to get on the boat. This went on for days, along with my grandmother having full conversations with relatives who had died years before I was even born. One day, my grandma asked again if it would be okay for her to leave on the boat. This time, my mother finally replied, "It's all right if you want to." My grandma passed away a couple of hours later. Here's an eerie little detail. My grandmother's watch, which was in another room at the time, stopped at the exact time of her death. Apparently, strange things tend to happen around the time of death in our family. When an uncle, whom I never met, passed away, a car of his that hadn't worked in years suddenly started. And when my grandma on my dad's side died, the doorbell at my parents' gate rang, but no one was standing there. You can see the gate from the kitchen, so there's no way someone could have run off unseen. Creepy stuff. Story 18. I'm just taking this as a therapeutic opportunity. Feel free to ignore. My paternal grandmother was an incredible woman. She lived through so much and even suffered the murder of her son. She finally got the strength to divorce my awful grandfather 3 years after the murder, but sadly didn't get to enjoy the freedom. She had a car accident due to a hypoglycemic episode tied to her type 1 diabetes, and her health declined rapidly from there. In 2006, things got worse quickly, and she ended up in the hospital for the final time. We had just gone through a major storm and had been without power for a week. The day the power came back, the house phone rang. It was my great uncle calling to say we needed to get there quickly. We made it within 2 hours and had to go in one at a time to see her. My grandma, who I had always been extremely close with, the same woman who saved my life when I tried to take it as a dumb teenager, didn't recognize me. She introduced herself and asked if we had met. I broke down crying. I'm crying now writing this. I miss her so much. And then she remembered who I was. I think she cried too once she realized. My memory blurs here, so I'm not certain. What I do remember clearly was our conversation afterward. She told me to keep doing good things. I hadn't even started college yet, and those words weighed heavily on me. I spent years trying to figure out what she meant. I still don't fully know. I'm trying, but I still worry I won't live up to her hope for me. She went through so much. Marrying young because she thought she had to, conceiving 4 out of 5 children against her will, nearly being forced to abort the 5th child because her husband didn't want to support another and lied about a vasectomy, discovering he had kept a mistress in another state for over a decade, surviving arson, he orchestrated that destroyed the family farm and its heirlooms, and losing a child and daughter-in-law to violence. She died at 62, just when she was finally free. I was 2 months into being 18. I was asked if I agreed to take her off life support, even though my dad and uncle had already said yes. I said yes because I had listened to the doctor's explanation. I stayed in the room while she passed. She opened her eyes wide and appeared to scan the room, then sighed a high-pitched sigh. I still hear it in my head. It sounded like the noise my dog makes when she's anxious. I don't feel great about that moment. The doctor explained that her eye movement was likely just a neurological response, and I believe that. I've seen it enough in my career to know it happens, but I still can't shake the feeling that I let her down. I hear that sigh and feel like I should have done something, even though I know there was nothing left to do. Anyway, I'm full on crying now. I miss her terribly. She understood me like no one else in the family ever did. Story 19. My grandpa was essentially my dad, though we weren't biologically related. He passed away from leukemia in 2011, and my family and I each took turns spending full days with him in the hospital during his final days. On my day with him, he was a bit off due to the pain and medication. Right after one of his more disconnected episodes, he sat up in bed, swung his feet over the side, and then suddenly just stopped mid-motion. like someone hit pause. From the mouth of a man who had never said anything about beauty, art, or anything like that, though he gave tons of great life advice, to be fair, came the words, "Majestic Park, look at the sky. It's beautiful." So I looked. To me, it looked like the sky from the Seine at Argenteuil, which is honestly pretty. Even to me, a complete Neanderthal when it comes to art. Then he continued, "I'm so proud of you and your mother." For me, the shocking part was hearing him acknowledge something beautiful like that. But the part about being proud of us really got to me, in a good way. I had to sit out my evening shift that day. I miss that guy. Story 20. This might not be exactly on point, but my uncle died without anyone in our family even knowing he had lung cancer. He literally didn't tell anyone except his girlfriend and one of his sons, the one he hadn't seen in 30 years until a year before he passed. He had been estranged from all four of his children. I didn't know he was gone until he had already passed away. Because he wasn't talking to us while he was getting sick, we all assumed he was angry at us, and especially at my dad for moving to the opposite end of the country. That wasn't the case, but that's what we believed at the time. He was really close to me and my brother, and we were included in his will, so the whole situation felt strange. I was really sad too, because I didn't get the chance to speak with him one last time. I'm tearing up just typing this. His will caused some tension because he had disowned two of his children in it. They had just started reconnecting with my dad and our side of the family. But after the will was revealed, that relationship broke down again. We haven't spoken to them in quite a while. Story 21. Oh, I've got a good one for this. My great-grandmother was on her deathbed, and my grandfather, her son, had been caring for her for the last year or so. About 3 days before she passed, she revealed to my grandfather that he had an older brother he never knew about. Apparently, my great-grandmother and great-grandfather had a child before they were married, and my great-great-grandmother forced them to give the baby to a family friend. My great-grandparents then got married and had three more boys. They all grew up not knowing about the older brother. When this was revealed, my grandfather searched for his brother's contact information and was able to reach him to let him know their mother was nearing the end. He was living in Minnesota at the time, and my grandfather was in Chicago, so he quickly drove down to be there. Shortly after his visit, my great-grandmother passed away. But after that, my grandfather and his brother stayed in touch, and we discovered there was an entire branch of our family we didn't even know existed. We got to meet many of them at the funeral, and since then, we've actually gotten very close, planning family reunions every year. It's incredibly sad that we had to meet them under such circumstances, but now, years later, it feels like we've known them forever. They've become a very close part of our lives. Story 22. We'll call my Aunt Anne and her sister, my other aunt, Betty. Anne was very religious. Betty was not. They had a childhood friend named Carol, who later married a man named John. Betty had moved away from their hometown decades ago, so Anne, Carol, and John remained much closer over the years. When John was near the end of his life, he confessed to Carol and my Aunt Anne that his somewhat radical but secretive group of friends had been responsible for an abortion clinic bombing that resulted in a death. Aunt Anne was actually proud of him and told him so. Later, she shared the confession and the details of that group of friends with Aunt Betty. She even said that in the eyes of God, Carol, John, and the others involved were heroes. My Aunt Betty was appalled. She immediately went to the authorities and gave them every detail she had. Even though the event had taken place years earlier, the information she provided could help connect other unsolved cases, identify suspects, or confirm the involvement of others still alive. We don't know the final outcome, but she didn't hesitate for a second to share the facts with law enforcement. She was horrified by what she heard. Story 23. My parents divorced in the early 90s. Dad remarried and Mom remarried. Custody of me and my sister was split, which was very unusual for Texas at the time. Back then, it was almost always assumed the kids would go with the mother. The man my mom married was a drinker, and yes, a real problem. I'm not exaggerating. He was verbally abusive, mentally abusive, and he even tried being physically abusive with me once. I nearly caved his head in with an old iron-bottom box phone when he attacked my mom and started beating her right in front of me. According to what my half-sister told me, since I wasn't there, my stepdad, her father, eventually admitted that he deeply regretted how he had treated me. He said the only reason he had held such animosity and hatred toward me during those 3 weekends a month I was there, court-ordered visitation, was because he never felt like it was his family. My presence reminded both him and my mom of her previous marriage and life. My half-sister said he apologized for everything he had said and done to me. In my opinion, I think he was trying to clear his conscience, knowing the end was near. Story 24. My uncle passed away last year, and before he died, he told me never to trust his wife or daughter because they had taken his property and land, and basically assaulted him when he went back to visit them after 30 years. Really messed up situation. On the day he died, the nurse was supposed to call my other uncle, but it turned out the daughter had gone behind everyone's back and changed the emergency contact info so the calls would go to her instead. Long story short, the nurses knew he was about to pass and called her to let her know that if anyone wanted to see him one last time, now was the moment. She told the nurse she couldn't make it. She was on a business call. She didn't let anyone else know he had passed until afterward, and then fake cried the entire 2-hour trip to the hospital. When we asked the nurses why we weren't notified earlier, they told us they had called her, and she said she couldn't come because of the business call, and she didn't want them telling us until after he was already gone, so he passed away alone. Story 25. It wasn't exactly her deathbed at the time, but my grandma passed away in early 2015.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
She had lost her only son back in the mid-1980s to a brain tumor. He was really young too, about my age at the time, mid-20s. When I walked into the room, she looked at me and asked, "Mikey, is that you?" After a moment, she realized it was me, and we talked for a bit. But it hit me hard during the drive back to college. I had a 2-hour drive ahead of me, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. My middle name was chosen in honor of the uncle I never met. Mikey was his nickname in the family. And by all accounts, he was an amazing person. When my grandma passed later that same week, she sat straight up in bed, surprising everyone, looked into the corner of the room with what my mom described as a look of complete surprise and said, "Mom?" She passed away just a few hours later. The day she died happened to be her mother's birthday. Story 26. In the days leading up to my grandfather's passing, he spent most of his time talking to my mom about taking care of my grandmother. She was frail and had relied on him for over 70 years. They had been in love for so long, but the pain from his cancer became unbearable. The last thing he said to us, over the phone, was to take care of her. He was barely coherent, not fully present, but despite that, he emphasized over and over that we needed to take care of her and that he was sorry. Sorry for what? We weren't exactly sure. But then, the next day, we received a phone call saying that he had taken his own life shortly after that phone conversation. It still hurts to think about, and I'll never forget the screaming that came from all of us that day, especially from my mom, who had a complicated, often strained relationship with him. He had apologized to her for how he'd treated her in the past. He had been borderline abusive and harsh throughout her life. But in that final phone call, he told her he trusted her more than anyone to take care of my grandmother. Story 27. I'd grown up thinking that my mother's parents, let's call him H.A. and her M.A., had 13 grandchildren. When H.A. died, I was told that the flower arrangement had one flower for each grandchild. There were 14. I asked my mother, and she said the 14th was for my uncle H.G.'s stepdaughter. It didn't make any sense to me since my oldest aunt, D.M., had two stepchildren, and my third aunt, D.J., had three stepchildren. But I let it go. H.A. was getting cremated, so there wasn't going to be a long procession to a cemetery. 2 years later, M.A. passed away. Same thing. A flower arrangement with 14 flowers for the 13 grandchildren. M.A. was being buried, H.A. in her arms. So there was going to be a long procession to a cemetery about an hour away. I kept remarking on how strange it was that the florist messed up two arrangements. As we pulled into the cemetery gates, my mother finally admitted that DM had had a child out of wedlock years before she married her husband. My jaw dropped. I had been too young to be a pallbearer 2 years earlier. One cousin nearly dropped H.A.'s casket, but I was a pallbearer this time with DM's three sons and would have to look them in the eye a mere 2 minutes later. It was definitely awkward. Anyway, DM was on her deathbed 4.5 years after M.A. Don't throw up every meal you eat, folks. Only then did she admit to the four kids she and her husband had that they had an older half-brother. The four were 31, 30, 27, and 26 at the time. Pretty shocking to me. Story 28. Sorry this is so long. Get out your tissues. My mom was the best person in the world. Never angry, never said a bad word about anyone. Humble, sweet, and kind. She had stage 4 lung cancer. When she knew her time was near, she kept it from us. Then one day she suddenly stopped breathing and was rushed to the hospital. As soon as the doctor saw me, he said, "Get all the family together now. She's not going to make it, but we can keep her on CPAP for a couple of days so she can be with the family." We knew it was coming, but it was still incredibly hard. She had been married to my dad for 49 years, having married at just 13. Over time, he had become very mean and bitter toward her. She asked to see him a few times. We couldn't bring ourselves to tell him it was her last days. Not sure if that was wise, but it felt like the best choice in our situation. Eventually, I brought him to the hospital. She couldn't eat or drink at this point. My dad, always addicted to some kind of pill, saw her suffering and tried to take the CPAP off so he could put a pill in her mouth. In 49 years, I had never stood up to him, old school respect and all. But that one time I said, "Daddy, please, she can't eat or drink. That'll make her choke." I can't remember everything I said, but I argued with him. He got mad, said, "I'm leaving," and stormed out. I told Mom I was sorry and went out to find him. He kept insisting that he knew what she needed. He refused to go back in, so I called my brother to come get him. I was too upset to drive. The whole thing was heartbreaking. She seemed fine, awake, alert, smiling, talking to everyone. We felt like we were ending her life by removing the machine. It made no sense. She didn't look like someone dying. If she had been still and unresponsive, we might have understood. We talked to doctors constantly about this. 6 days before all this, my younger brother, who lived with them and helped care for them, was arrested right in front of them and taken to prison. Mama never mentioned it, not once. We knew she didn't want to upset us. We didn't bring it up either. She did ask for my dad a few more times. My older brother eventually told her we just couldn't do it. It still hurts that we didn't, but if we had, it might have been even worse. At that point, she didn't know she was dying, or maybe she did and didn't want to say. We agonized over whether to tell her. On her third day there, we finally told her, because our aunt said, "What if there's something she wants to say to y'all?" Her death was planned, I guess you could say. The doctor scheduled a time to remove the CPAP and administer morphine. She held on for hours, awake, with eyes open, just wanting to see my dad. We stayed out of the room for a while, hoping she would fall asleep. Then she called us all in. We stood in a circle around her bed. She looked at each one of us, calling us by her nickname for each of us. Then she asked, "Are y'all going to be okay?" We cried and laughed at the same time and told her, "Yeah, we will." After that, she wanted to talk to each of us one by one. I was first, being the oldest. I won't go into those details, this is already long. After the last person came out, we waited in the hallway. She wouldn't go to sleep. She finally did, and we were at peace, just wanting her to go be with her parents and the rest of the family. That night, I went to see my brother in jail. My other brother went to be with my dad. It was all so sad. It felt like something out of a movie. My dad died a month later. My brother is still in prison. Story 29. I'd get my own back in more subtle ways. I'd get him into trouble in ways that made me look all innocent and caring, even though I knew exactly what I was doing. My favorite way of getting back at him was when we were sitting at the dinner table. I'd start yelling and crying on cue. "Ow, stop it. Mom, Dad, he's kicking me under the table. Please stop. It hurts." Got him sent to his room without dinner quite a few times that way. There was also the time when he just wouldn't let up and kept getting on my case all day. I finally had enough at dinner, calmly turned to my dad, and told him that my brother was growing something suspicious down the side of the house. Then I went right back to eating dinner while everything exploded around me. To be fair, if anyone other than him was a threat to me in any way, he was always there to defend me. We were close for a while, but I realized about a year ago that I don't really like him as a person. He's really self-involved and narcissistic, so I just don't talk to him anymore. My parents aren't happy that I don't want a relationship with him, but it's my choice. Story 30. I'm way late, and this wasn't exactly a confession, but I was surprised to hear it anyway. 3 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. It had already metastasized to her brain, sternum, breast, and liver, so her prognosis wasn't great, but she never complained. She stayed upbeat, cheerful, and never took anything for pain, so I think my mom was basically Wonder Woman. As treatment progressed, it completely wore her down. She couldn't even get into bed without help, so I had to physically move her to change the sheets, her clothes, or to help her shower. Thank goodness for a stall shower and a medical bench. One evening, after I'd changed her and freshened everything up, I was tucking her in, lifting her legs into bed. She was too weak to do it herself. And she said, "Thank you, S." I know she meant thanks for getting her warm and comfortable, but I also know she meant it for everything. My family and I had already planned for me to move back in with her because I was leaving work to go back to school, even before her diagnosis, so that timing worked out. I balanced a full-time schedule with taking her to appointments, cooking, cleaning, and just doing whatever she needed. In between all that, I also had a colonoscopy, CT scans, and other appointments because I have Crohn's disease. I still managed to pull off a 4.0 GPA that semester. I was surprised how easily school came back to me after 16 years away. Those words weren't her last, but they were close. I think those three words are the most meaningful things she ever said to me. But she was my mom. She changed my diapers and fed me for years, while the feeding part went on much longer than the diapers. How could I not do the same when she needed me? Story 31. My grandma was the kind of person who always had a strong presence. She was tough, direct, and rarely showed emotion. The kind of woman who raised 6 kids on her own and never once asked for help. But during her final days, something changed. She had been in the hospital for over a week. I stayed with her as much as I could, even if she wasn't fully conscious most of the time. One night, just after midnight, she opened her eyes and looked straight at me. Her voice was weak but clear. She said, "I lied to your mom her whole life." That caught me completely off guard. She went on to explain that the man my mom believed was her father wasn't actually her biological dad. My grandma had had a brief relationship with someone else while she and her husband were separated, and when she found out she was pregnant, she decided never to tell anyone. "I thought I was protecting her," she whispered, "but I think I was just scared." She passed away 2 days later. We haven't told my mom yet. I don't know if we ever will. Story 32. My uncle was a loner. Never married, no kids, lived in a small house out in the countryside. He'd show up at family events once in a while, stay quiet, then disappear again for months. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and didn't tell anyone until he had just weeks left. When I visited him at the hospice, he asked to speak to me alone. I didn't expect much. He barely ever talked to me growing up. But this time, he opened up. He said he had a son. Somewhere out there, he had a child from a relationship he ended in his early 20s. He admitted that he was too afraid to be a father and walked away before the baby was even born. He never looked back. "I think about him every day," he told me. "I imagine he has kids of his own now. Maybe one of them looks like me." Before I could ask more, he got tired and fell asleep. He passed 3 days later. We've never found the son. No one knew he existed. Story 33. My dad and I didn't get along for most of my life. He was strict, cold, and always seemed disappointed in everything I did. Even after I moved out, we barely spoke. When he got sick with heart failure, I visited out of obligation more than anything else. On one of my visits, he was sitting by the window in his hospital room, staring outside. He didn't turn to look at me when he spoke. He just said, "I was harder on you than I should have been. I didn't know what to say." Then he continued, "I wanted you to be strong because I was afraid you'd be like me. Weak, angry, always pushing people away." He finally turned to me and said, "You became a good man despite me, not because of me." That moment broke something open in me. For the first time, I saw him as a person, not just my father. He died a week later. We didn't fix everything, but I'm grateful we had that one honest moment before the end. Story 34. My mother-in-law and I had a complicated relationship. I married her only son, and from the beginning, she never seemed to think I was enough for him. She wasn't cruel, but she was cold, distant, and overly involved. She would come over unannounced, criticize how I folded the laundry or cooked dinner, and often referred to her son's ex as the one that got away. My husband always asked me to ignore her, and I did, for the most part. When she was diagnosed with ALS, everything shifted. The disease progressed quickly. Within a year, she couldn't walk on her own. 2 years in, she couldn't speak. My husband was devastated, and we moved her into our home to care for her. I won't lie, it wasn't easy. She needed constant help. We had to feed her, bathe her, reposition her in bed, and manage her medications around the clock. There were days I resented the responsibility. My husband was working full-time, so most of the day-to-day care fell on me. But I did it, not because we were close, but because it was the right thing to do. And I kept hoping, deep down, that maybe taking care of her would bridge the distance between us. About 6 months before she passed, she started using an eye-tracking device to communicate. She would type slowly, one letter at a time, and I could read the screen aloud to help her feel heard. One afternoon, when my husband was at work and the house was quiet, she typed, "I used to hate you." I froze. I didn't know what to say. Before I could respond, she kept typing, "I thought you were taking him from me." Then after a pause, "You didn't. You gave him back to me. I see how he smiles now. He didn't smile like that before." She typed out an apology. It took her almost 15 minutes to complete the whole message, but I read every word. She said she was sorry for the years of distance, for the judgment, for making me feel unwelcome in the family. She admitted she had never seen what was right in front of her, that I made her son happy, and that I had taken care of her when no one else would have. I couldn't hold back tears. I sat next to her and just held her hand for a long time. We didn't need to say anything else. A few days before she passed, she typed a final message to me. It said, "Please don't let him fall apart. Keep him whole. He'll listen to you." She died in our home, with my husband holding one hand and me holding the other. We had soft music playing and a candle burning on the nightstand. It was peaceful, quiet, and heartbreakingly beautiful. After the funeral, we found a box in her closet labeled with my name. Inside were old family photos, her wedding ring, and a letter. In the letter, she wrote about how proud she was that her son had chosen someone strong, someone patient, someone better than she had been. I still keep that letter in my nightstand. We didn't start with love, but somehow in the end, she gave me the one thing I never expected, her blessing. Story 35. My dad was always a quiet man, not cold, just private. He was the kind of father who showed love by checking the oil in your car or fixing the leaky faucet without saying a word. He worked as a mechanic his whole life and came home smelling like oil and metal, with his hands permanently stained. I always thought I understood him, that he was just a man of few words who'd rather build than talk. But I was wrong, or at least I only ever knew part of the story. When he got diagnosed with congestive heart failure, he didn't tell anyone right away. We only found out after he collapsed in the garage and was rushed to the hospital. He recovered from that incident, but the doctors made it clear he didn't have much time. During his last few weeks, he stayed in our guest room because he didn't want to die in a hospital. We took turns staying with him. One night, it was my shift. I was sitting quietly reading when I heard him say my name. I went over, thinking he needed water or help adjusting his pillow. Instead, he asked me to bring him the old wooden box from the basement. I knew the one. He kept it locked and told us it was just old junk. I brought it to him and helped him open it. Inside were dozens of old letters, yellowed and fragile. He handed one to me. It was addressed to a woman named Elise. I didn't recognize the name. "She was the one before your mom," he said quietly. "The one I let go." He went on to tell me that he had been engaged before meeting my mother. Elise was the love of his youth. They'd planned to get married, build a life together. But her parents didn't approve of him. He wasn't educated enough, didn't come from the right kind of family. Eventually, she gave in to the pressure and broke it off. A year later, he met my mom. He said he grew to love her, and they had a good life. But part of his heart always belonged to Elise. They had written to each other for years after breaking up, until one day, the letter stopped. He found out later she had passed away in an accident. "I never told your mother," he said, "and I never told you kids. But I don't want to take that part of me to the grave without sharing it." I sat with him that night reading a few of the letters. They were beautiful, filled with longing and hope. I saw a version of my father I'd never met, a poetic, emotional young man full of dreams and heartbreak. He passed away 3 days later. At the funeral, I slipped one of the letters into his pocket before the casket was closed. It didn't feel like betrayal. It felt like peace. Story 36. My older sister and I never really got along growing up. We weren't enemies, but we just missed each other. Different personalities, different friends, different paths. She was loud, confident, popular. I was quiet, bookish, always in her shadow. After she moved away for college, we didn't talk much. Family holidays were polite but distant. Then she got sick. At first, it was just fatigue and nausea, then back pain. After months of tests and wrong diagnoses, it turned out to be late-stage pancreatic cancer. She was 36. When she came home to live with our parents during treatment, I volunteered to help. I had just switched to a remote job, so I had the flexibility. I think she was surprised I offered. She told me later she thought I hated her. That broke me. I didn't hate her. I just never knew how to be close to her. Over the next few months, I got to know my sister in a way I never had before. She told me stories from her teenage years, about things she'd hidden from our parents, crushes she never talked about, regrets she held close. We laughed a lot more than I expected. We cried, too. One night, she asked me to climb into bed with her because she was scared to be alone. I did. She was so thin by then, bones and whispers. She looked at me and said, "I wish we had more time as sisters. I spent so long being jealous of you." I was stunned. "Jealous of me?" I asked. "Yeah," she said. "You always seemed so sure of yourself. You didn't care what people thought. I spent years chasing validation. You just lived." That night changed everything. The last week of her life, she could barely speak, but she'd hold my hand and squeeze it 3 times. We used to joke it meant, "You're annoying," but I knew it really meant, "I love you." When she passed, I wasn't angry or bitter. I was grateful for the time we had, for the version of her I finally got to meet, for the sister I found in the final months of her life. Now I visit her grave sometimes, and I still squeeze her name on the headstone 3 times just to let her know I remember. Story 37. When my grandmother was on her deathbed, she asked to speak to me alone. That surprised everyone, especially since I was the youngest adult in the family. I assumed it was going to be a goodbye or maybe something sweet. Instead, she changed everything I thought I knew about my family. She looked me straight in the eyes and said, "I need you to know something, and you can decide what to do with it." Then she told me that my uncle, my mom's older brother, the one who had moved away when I was little and had barely visited, wasn't actually her son. She said he was the child of her husband's affair. Her husband had cheated on her with a neighbor when they were still newlyweds. The woman had gotten pregnant and wanted to leave town in shame, but my grandmother stepped in and offered to raise the child herself just to keep the family intact. "I didn't do it out of kindness," she said. "I did it because I didn't want anyone to know he had betrayed me." She said the entire family thought she had given birth at home, which was common back then, and she went along with it. Even her own sisters never knew the truth. She raised that child like he was her own, but she confessed that she never fully bonded with him emotionally and that she always felt a quiet resentment, not toward the boy, but toward her husband. Before she passed, she begged me not to judge her too harshly and to do what I thought was right with the truth. So far, I haven't told anyone, but it changed how I look at my family forever. Story 38. My dad was the most straightforward, no-nonsense person I've ever known. He worked hard his entire life, never missed a day, and was the kind of guy who believed in right and wrong, no gray areas. So when he called me to his hospital room a few days before he passed, I thought it would be the usual. Life advice, maybe some financial instructions. What he said instead left me speechless. He told me that in the 1980s, during a time when he was struggling financially and emotionally, he had an affair. Not just any affair, he had fathered a child. He knew the woman had the baby, but he had signed away any rights and walked away completely. He never told my mother, and no one else in the family knew. "I've thought about that child every day for over 30 years," he said, "but I couldn't face what I'd done. I was a coward." Then he handed me a sealed envelope and said, "Everything is in here. I didn't want to die without giving you a chance to know your sibling, if they're still out there." I sat in the car for 40 minutes after he died, holding that envelope and wondering whether opening it would break our family, or maybe, eventually, help it heal. I still haven't decided what to do. Story 39. My Aunt Laura was always the life of every party. She was glamorous, dramatic, and had this larger-than-life energy that pulled everyone in. She never had children of her own, but she loved being the cool aunt. I always admired her growing up. When she got sick, the decline was rapid. Cancer moved through her so fast that by the time she accepted visitors, we all knew we didn't have much time left with her. I went to see her one afternoon, just wanting to say goodbye, but she had something on her mind. She grabbed my hand and said, "I need to tell someone before I go, and you're the only one I trust with this." Then she told me that years ago, when she was in her early 20s, she had given birth to a baby girl. No one knew, not even her parents. She had been living out of state at the time, attending college, and she said the father was a married professor. She went to a private maternity home, gave birth, and placed the baby for adoption. Then she came home and never told a soul. I followed her life through the adoption agency updates. "I even have pictures," she said, pointing to a locked drawer in her nightstand. She turned out beautiful, smart. I wanted to reach out so many times, but I was afraid. Afraid she'd hate me. Afraid everyone else would. She asked me to find her daughter and give her a letter she had written years ago. Just in case. She died the next morning. I did find her daughter. I delivered the letter. I don't know what happened between them afterward, but I know that woman cried when she read it. And I know my aunt finally got to say the one thing she'd held in for decades. "I loved you. I never stopped." Story 40. When my grandfather was hospitalized for the last time, the doctors said he had only a few days left. We were all taking turns staying with him. I was never particularly close to him. He was strict, distant, and a bit intimidating. But I loved him, in the quiet, complicated way you sometimes love difficult family members. The night I stayed with him alone, I expected silence, maybe a few murmurs in his sleep. Instead, he grabbed my hand and said, "You need to know something before I leave." He then confessed that during the 1960s, when he was stationed overseas for military work, he had a relationship with a woman in a small village. He said they were young and naive, but very much in love. The relationship ended when he was suddenly transferred, and he never had the chance or the courage to tell her goodbye. A year later, he received a letter that he ignored. It said she had given birth to a baby boy. He had thrown the letter away and never spoke of it again. Not to his wife, not to his children. He carried it with him for over 50 years. "I think I have a son somewhere in another country," he whispered, "and I've never told anyone." Then he cried. It was the first and only time I ever saw him cry. He passed away 2 days later. To this day, I don't know if I should tell the rest of the family, but I did start looking. I feel like I owe it to him, or maybe to the man out there who never knew who his father was. Story 41. My mom passed away after a long battle with ovarian cancer. She was the strongest person I've ever known. Always smiling, always protecting everyone else's emotions before her own. But on her final night, she pulled me close and whispered something that shattered me. "I had another baby before you." I was stunned. She told me that when she was 17, she got pregnant by her high school boyfriend. Her parents sent her to a private home for unwed girls, and she gave birth to a little boy. He was immediately placed for adoption, and she never saw him again. She never told my father, never told her siblings. I was the only one who ever heard this part of her life. "I think about him every year on his birthday," she said. "I always imagined he had a good life. I tried to believe that, but I never stopped wondering." She had written him letters over the years, ones she never mailed, and asked me if I could try to find him and give them to him. I said I would. After she passed, I found the letters in a box under her bed. There were 28 of them, one for every birthday he'd had up to that point. Each one started with "Dear Michael," which I assume was the name she gave him in her heart. I haven't found him yet, but I will, I promised her. Story 42. My great uncle Henry was one of those men who lived a quiet, simple life. No wife, no kids, just an old pickup truck and a farm he worked alone. He always came to family holidays, always brought a pie, and always left early. He was friendly but private. We all thought we knew everything about him. Then during his final days, my father and I went to visit him at the small rural hospital near his town. He was already on morphine, slipping in and out, but when he saw me, he grabbed my arm and said something that made my blood run cold. I saw someone die, and I didn't stop it. I asked what he meant, and he started telling a story from the 1970s. He said he had been in the woods hunting when he saw a man and a woman arguing near a riverbank. He stayed hidden because he thought it was a domestic dispute and didn't want to get involved. But then he saw the man shove the woman. She fell, hit her head on the rocks, and stopped moving. He panicked. Instead of helping or calling someone, he ran. The next day, the woman was found dead, and it made the local papers. No suspect was ever arrested. He told me he had lived with that guilt for over 40 years, that he didn't know if she could have been saved, that he thought maybe the man had meant to hurt her, or maybe it was just a horrible accident, but that either way, he had done nothing. I see her face every time I close my eyes, he said, tears streaming down his cheeks. He asked me not to tell anyone, said he just wanted someone to know before he went. So far, I haven't said a word, until now. Story 43. My grandmother was always seen as the backbone of the family. She raised 5 children, worked 2 jobs, and somehow still had a warm meal on the table every single night. She was religious, strict, and never missed a Sunday at church. Everyone saw her as a pillar of moral strength. When she was on her deathbed at 89, she had already outlived her husband by over 20 years. Her mind was still sharp, and during her final week, she asked to speak to each of her children and grandchildren alone. When it was my turn, I expected her to give me life advice or a blessing. Instead, she said something that completely shook me. I had an affair. 2. I didn't know what to say, she continued. It was during the 70s. Your grandfather and I were going through a hard time. He was drinking, and I felt invisible. I met a man at work. He listened. He made me feel seen. It only lasted a few months, and years later, it happened again with someone else. I ended it both times.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.